picture 50 billion pesos. I mean, try to imagine the sheer volume of concrete pour or, you know, cargo ships loaded.
Right.
Just the hours worked by real people to generate that kind of money. It is a staggering amount of economic energy.
It really is. It's massive.
But now imagine finding out that none of it actually existed.
Yeah.
None at all. From 2008 all the way to December 2022, this sprawling, completely invisible empire operated in the Philippines.
Yeah.
And it was generating tens of billions of pesos in transactions entirely out of thin air. So today we are, you know, tearing down the paper walls of what is essentially the ultimate ghost economy.
It's a fascinating case.
We are doing a deep dive into this masterclass expose on how false transactions can be transformed into massive tax losses, severe money laundering risks, and really what this teaches you about the vulnerabilities in our global financial systems.
Yeah, that 50 billion number, it really is a figure that forces you to just stop and completely recalibrate your understanding of financial crime. Because we aren't talking about like a single bank heist here or a momentary glitch in an accounting system where someone accidentally moved a decimal point.
Right. It's not a mistake.
Exactly. Mm. We're talking about a systemic multi-year operation that successfully simulated a completely fake economic reality. And they tricked over 1,000 different legitimate companies into buying a piece of that illusion.
Okay, let's unpack this. Because before we can really grasp how a scheme grows in the dark to become a 50 billion peso problem, we first have to understand the specific mechanism these criminals exploited.
Right, you have to look at the mechanics.
Like, how do you actually turn a piece of paper into cold, hard cash? And that starts with the tax system itself specifically, the value-added tax, or VAT.
Yeah, VAT is really the engine powering this entire operation.
Right.
To understand the exploit, you really have to look at how VAT normally functions for a legitimate everyday business.
Which is pretty standard everywhere, right?
Yeah, yeah, it's essentially a balancing act. On one side of the ledger, a company charges what is called output VAT to its customers when it sells goods or services.
Okay, so they collect that tax on behalf of the government.
Exactly. But then on the other side of the ledger, that same company is allowed to deduct the input VAT.
And that's the tax they paid on their own legitimate business purchases.
Right. Things like raw materials, rent, office supplies, or, you know, consulting services. At the end of the month or the quarter, the company only pays the government the difference between the VAT they collected and the VAT they spent.
Which fundamentally makes sense. I mean, the system is designed so you only pay tax on the actual value your specific business added to the supply chain.
Right. That's the whole point of it.
But this is where the ghost receipts come in and just completely snap that seesaw in half. Mm. These perpetrators manipulate the mechanism by fabricating that input VAT purchase.
Yeah, they generate this highly official-looking receipt for a massive business expense, but no actual goods or services ever change hands.
So they just invent a purchase out of nowhere.
Completely. By injecting a totally fictitious purchase into their accounting, the buyer artificially inflates their deductible expenses. It is, it's an incredibly lucrative accounting magic trick.
I bet.
By making their expenses look much higher than they actually are in reality, they shrink the difference they owe to the government. And the beauty of the scheme, for the criminals at least, is that it works double duty.
What do you mean?
Well, inflating those business expenses also drastically lowers their reported taxable income, which simultaneously shrinks their corporate income tax liabilities, too.
Oh, wow. It's like turning in a perfectly formatted, meticulously detailed expense report for a lavish corporate dinner. Like, you have the itemized receipt for the steak, the wine, the dessert.
Right.
Except the restaurant doesn't exist, you never actually met a client, and you just pocketed a massive cash reimbursement from your company.
That's exactly it.
Except in this scenario, the company being defrauded is the national government.
What's fascinating here is the psychological and legal shift this represents in the world of financial crime. This isn't just a taxpayer, you know, forgetting to report income.
Which would just be your standard tax evasion.
Exactly, your run-of-the-mill crime of omission. This is a deliberate crime of commission. This is the proactive, calculated creation of false evidence.
They are building a fake reality.
Yeah, it is specifically designed from the ground up to survive a government audit and justify the unlawful tax treatment.
Mm.
They aren't just hiding money. they are building a paper fortress.
So they've built this paper fortress that can fool a standard spreadsheet review, but fabricating a single fake receipt to save a few bucks is just a nuisance to tax authorities.
Right, that's small potatoes.
But servicing 1,000 different companies over 14 years, that requires something far more sinister, that it requires the industrialization of fraud.
It requires a factory. And when investigators finally pull back the curtain, that is exactly what they uncovered. It operated like a literal assembly line for deceit.
The sheer scale of this operation is what really blows my mind. The authorities didn't just find one or two shady guys operating out of a basement with a stolen printer.
No, not at all.
They found over 100 registered corporations acting as the central provider of these ghost invoices. And these were not sloppy fakes. These corporations had valid incorporation documents filed with the government.
Yeah.
They had legitimate taxpayer identification numbers. They had real functioning bank accounts.
But structurally, if you look past the paperwork, they were completely hollow. I mean, they had zero employees on payroll.
None.
Absolutely zero inventory. They had no physical offices, no warehouses or storefronts. They possessed absolutely no capacity to actually supply the millions of dollars in goods and services they were supposedly selling every single week.
And they were incredibly bespoke with their fakes, too. The source material notes that these ghost corporations even specialized their fake invoices to seamlessly match the buyer's specific industry.
Yes, that detail is wild.
So, like, if the buyer was a commercial construction firm, the ghost receipt would be meticulously itemized for building materials, rebar, and cement.
Right.
But if the buyer was a digital marketing agency, the receipt was for market research or consulting services. They tailored the illusion so the expenses would look perfectly mundane and credible on an audit.
Because the camouflage really relies on the mundane nature of the transaction. To an auditor scrolling through thousands of lines on a spreadsheet, a construction firm buying lumber makes perfect sense.
Yeah, you wouldn't look twice at it.
There's no initial reason to scrutinize it.
Wait, I'm stuck on something here. Here's where it gets really interesting, and I have to push back a little on the mechanics.
Sure, go ahead.
You just said they have valid tax IDs, legitimate incorporation papers, and real bank accounts. So to the government's own databases, they aren't ghosts at all. They look totally real.
They do, on paper.
So how does an investigator looking at a spreadsheet possibly prove that a real tax ID and a perfectly formatted receipt belong to a fake company? Seems like an airtight crime.
You've hit on the exact reason why reviewing a single supplier in isolation is completely inconclusive. If you look at one perfect piece of paper, you see a perfect transaction.
Right.
If you look at one corporate registry file, you see a real company. This is exactly why network analysis became the critical, indispensable tool for investigators here. You can't just look at the paper. You have to look at the invisible infrastructure producing the paper.
You have to find the factory floor.
Exactly. When the 2023 investigation really gained momentum, digital forensics came into play. Authorities executed warrants and seized computers and hard drives from the suspected central operators.
Then what did they find?
That is where they found the smoking gun. They discovered that dozens of supposedly unrelated, entirely separate companies were all being operated off the exact same laptops.
Oh, wow.
They shared the same accountants, the exact same telephone numbers, the same IP addresses, and the exact same invoice templates.
So the grand illusion of a diverse, bustling marketplace of 100 different suppliers completely shatters when you realize they're all using the same Wi-Fi connection in the same room.
Yeah, they might rotate which shell company issues the invoice if one gets investigated, or they might acquire dormant older companies to use as fresh fronts to avoid suspicion. But centralized control always leaves digital fingerprints.
It has to.
The coordination required to run 100 fake companies is ultimately their undoing.
But even with those digital fingerprints sitting on a seized laptop, the paperwork out in the real world was virtually flawless. So to really nail these guys, investigators had to stop looking at the paper and start looking at the cash.
Yes.
Because you can fake an invoice in Microsoft Word, but it is substantially harder to fake the physical movement of millions of pesos through the actual banking system.
And this is where we cross the line from tax evasion into blatant money laundering. Because the documentation only tells half the story. You have to compare the invoice with the actual flow of funds.
How does that work?
Well, in a typical ghost receipt transaction, the buyer actually transfers the full, real value of the fake invoice to the ghost supplier's bank account.
Okay, so real money moves.
Yes, And this is crucial because it makes the purchase look entirely legitimate on the buyer's books.
Right. An auditor sees an invoice for 1,000,000 pesos and a corresponding timestamped bank transfer for 1,000,000 pesos. It matches perfectly.
But obviously, the legitimate business buying the ghost receipt doesn't want to actually lose 1,000,000 pesos in cash just to save a fraction of that on their taxes.
No, that would defeat the whole purpose.
So the ghost supplier takes that bank transfer, keeps a percentage for themselves as a commission for providing the fake paper, and then they have to secretly funnel the rest of the money back to the buyer.
So what does this all mean for the banks? I mean, how do these ghost networks actually get the cash back to the buyer without setting off massive alarms?
It requires intense financial gymnastics, and it happens in a few different ways. Sometimes it is incredibly blunt-like, massive cash withdrawals that are literally handed back in bags under the table.
Just straight up cash in a bag.
Yeah, but other times it involves what we call circular transfers.
Circular transfers. Break that down for us.
Imagine washing dirty money by moving it through a neighborhood of completely empty houses. The ghost supplier receives the funds and immediately wires it to shell company A.
Okay.
Shell company A holds it for a day, then wires it to shell company B. Shell company B then routes it through a supposedly unrelated intermediary or connected individual, and eventually it lands back in an account controlled by the original buyer.
Wow.
By the time the money arrives, its origin is completely scrambled.
But moving money through empty houses like that has to trigger anti-money laundering or AML red flags, doesn't it?
Massive red flags.
Mm-hmm.
Financial institutions start seeing patterns that make zero economic sense. You have huge payments going to operationally inactive suppliers.
Because they don't actually do anything.
Right. You have funds coming in from dozens of unrelated businesses in entirely different industries and then being rapidly withdrawn as cash within 24 hours.
That looks super sketchy.
It's extremely. You see round value transfers that match invoice totals perfectly, which is highly suspicious because in real commerce, taxes, shipping, and fees almost always create uneven numbers.
Oh, that's true. It's rarely a flat million.
And most importantly, you see supplier accounts operating primarily as pass-through facilities. Money comes in and immediately goes out, showing absolutely no evidence of the company paying for real-world things like inventory, payroll, utilities, or operating costs.
If you are an executive listening to this, you might be thinking about your own corporate structures. Can a corporate CEO or a board of directors just throw up their hands when caught and say, "Hey, my procurement team and our external accountants handled that. We have thousands of suppliers. I had absolutely no idea we were buying ghost receipts."
This raises an important question about corporate governance, and the authorities in the Philippines took a shockingly hard line on this.
They did.
Yes. The Bureau of Internal Revenue, the BIR, realized that just playing whack-a-mole and shutting down the ghost companies wasn't enough. The real money and the real deterrent was in going after the buyers.
The people fueling the demand.
Exactly. So they launched a massive aggressive enforcement campaign called the Run After Fake Transactions Program, or RAFT.
That RAFT didn't pull any punches. They went straight for the C-suite.
It was staggeringly effective. In 2023, the program generated a respectable 600 million pesos in collections.
Okay, pretty good.
But by 2025, that number had exploded to over 4.3 billion. They multiply their collections by 7 times in just 2 years.
That is a massive jump.
And the reason it jumped so dramatically is because the BIR explicitly refused to accept the "I didn't know" defense. They pierced the corporate veil. They filed severe criminal complaints against corporate officers. But they also went after the professional enablers.
The certified public accountants and the bookkeepers.
Yes.
Because large-scale 50 billion peso fraud doesn't happen by accident. It requires professional architects.
The BIR stance became crystal clear. Financial statements are produced through a chain of responsibility. Boards of directors and audit committees are required by law to understand how their suppliers are selected and vetted.
You can't just pass the buck.
Exactly. Delegation of tax preparation to an external CPA does not magically remove your accountability for the fraudulent data you hand to that advisor.
Right.
And conversely, if an accountant structures the entries to claim unlawful benefits, based on obviously hollow documentation, they're equally on the hook.
It is a massive wake-up call. But you also mentioned the banks seeing all these red flags earlier. Are the banks supposed to be acting as tax auditors here? Like, why aren't they stopping the transfers?
The source material is very careful to make a distinction here. A bank is not expected to be a tax auditor. It is not a bank teller's job to determine a corporate customer's final tax liability.
Okay, that makes sense.
However, banks are legally obligated to flag transactions that clearly lack an underlying legal or economic purpose. When banks' automated systems see a newly formed shell company receiving huge payments and instantly dispersing the funds to unrelated entities, they have a strict duty to file a suspicious transaction report. And the most effective of these reports don't just say large transfer, they explicitly point out the economic inconsistency of the account's behavior.
Which naturally leads us to a really disturbing realization. Knowing exactly how this mechanism works, knowing the digital fingerprints they leave, and knowing who is responsible, it becomes painfully obvious that our standard corporate defenses are continually failing to stop this.
They really are.
The traditional ways we monitor business are outmatched. We desperately need a new approach.
We do, because conventional controls are fundamentally built for a different era. There are two main reasons why the current system fails so spectacularly. The first is the silo problem.
The left hand has no idea what the right hand is doing.
Exactly. The tax authority, the BIR, they only see the tax declarations and the claimed credits at the end of the quarter. The banks, on the other hand, only see the raw cash transfers.
Right.
The corporate registries only hold the static ownership information, and the buyers hold the purchase orders. The data is completely fragmented.
No one has the full puzzle.
No single entity sees the entire fraudulent picture until a massive, highly coordinated audit happens.
And by the time all those agencies finally talk to each other and launch that audit, the ghost company has already closed its bank accounts, shredded the documents, and vanished.
Exactly. The other major challenge, and this is perhaps the most difficult to solve, is that modern business norms actually provide incredible unintentional cover for these ghosts.
How so?
Think about how legitimate businesses operate today. Countless highly profitable businesses operate entirely remotely. They aggressively outsource their labor. They utilize drop shippings. They never hold physical inventory. Or they provide purely intangible digital services like software or consulting.
Oh, I see. So if a tax investigator points at a company and says, hey, this business has no physical office and no warehouse, it must be a fraud, a completely legitimate defense today is, yeah, neither does a massively profitable tech consulting firm based entirely on cloud computing.
Exactly. The absence of a traditional office or physical inventory is no longer automatic proof of fraud. It makes the investigator's job incredibly difficult because the ghosts look identical to modern lean startups.
So how on earth do we fix it? How does a government combat an enemy that looks exactly like a normal business?
Well, the Philippines is tackling this by mandating a phased, mandatory rollout of electronic invoicing.
Okay, e-invoicing.
Yeah, they've given covered taxpayers, like large e-commerce businesses, major exporters, and top corporations, until December 31st, 2026, to implement standardized electronic invoicing systems that report directly to the government.
So implementing electronic invoicing is kind of like upgrading from a manual toll booth with a guy taking coins to an automated high-speed scanner on the highway.
That's a good way to look at it.
It's way faster, and the tax authority can spot duplicate receipt numbers or mathematically abnormal transaction volumes almost instantly, rather than waiting 3 years to sift through dusty paper files.
Right, the speed is key.
But if the car driving through that automated scanner has stolen license plates, the scanner still lets it through. It's garbage in, garbage out. If the digital invoice is perfectly formatted, mathematically correct, but based on a fake transaction, e-invoicing alone doesn't actually solve the root problem.
If we connect this to the bigger picture, your toll booth analogy is spot on. Digitalization is not a silver bullet.
No, it can't be.
The source material heavily emphasizes that sophisticated criminals can simply compromise legitimate invoicing systems or create perfectly formatted false digital transactions that pass all the automated checks.
So what's the actual solution then?
The true defensive value only comes when a company adopts what the investigation calls a resilient control stack.
A resilient control stack. This sounds like the actual playbook for stopping the fraud. Break those layering down for us. How does it actually work in practice?
It is essentially a framework of six layers of defense that have to operate simultaneously. You cannot just rely on one. Layer one is supplier due diligence.
Meaning what exactly?
This means going beyond just collecting a tax ID. It means actively verifying a vendor's operational capacity before approving them. Do they actually have the trucks to deliver the concrete they are selling you?
Layer two is transaction validation. And from what I understand, this is really the silver bullet of the whole stack.
It is. Transaction validation means you stop just mashing a piece of paper to a bank transfer. You have to match the invoice to physical reality.
Okay.
Did the delivery truck actually scan into the construction site? If you don't have GPS data, a physical delivery log, or a stamped receiving report from the warehouse manager for that lumber, the invoice is treated as radioactive. You demand hard evidence of execution.
It's moving from, did we pay for it, to, did it actually happen?
Exactly.
What about the next layers?
Layer 3 is network analytics. This is where companies actively monitor their own supplier databases, looking for those shared directors, overlapping IP addresses, or identical bank accounts across multiple vendors.
Finding those digital fingerprints.
Yes. Then layer 4 is risk-based monitoring of accounts payable. Your accounting software should automatically flag unusual pricing models or massive sudden payments to newly created unvetted entities.
And the final two layers are more about human behavior and systems, right?
Yes. Layer 5 is professional accountability. You have to ensure that procurement, tax, and finance teams have clear, documented responsibilities for challenging unsupported transactions. They can't just operate in silos and say, not my job.
Right. Everyone is on the hook.
And the final layer, layer 6, is public-private intelligence sharing. Tax authorities, banks, and corporate registries have to lawfully coordinate their data in real time. They need a mechanism to see the whole picture before the losses become systemic and the ghosts vanish.
It really requires a total paradigm shift in how we view corporate compliance and auditing. Because for anyone listening to this, whether you work in corporate finance, you're running your own small business, or you're just trying to understand the mechanics of the modern economy, this entire case proves one terrifying reality. Documentation is no longer proof of reality. A piece of paper or a PDF, no matter how official it looks, is just a claim. You have to aggressively test the actual business activity beneath the document.
And that reality leaves us with a rather profound, almost existential question to consider as we look to the future.
What's that?
Well, the investigation highlighted how incredibly difficult it is to audit intangible services today. So as the global economy becomes increasingly digital, heavily service-based, and eventually driven by AI agents doing autonomous work in the cloud, will the line between a fraudulent ghost corporation and a hyper-efficient, fully automated, legitimate business become entirely impossible for authorities to distinguish?
Wow. That is something to keep you up at night. Because if an artificial intelligence is generating the market research report and another artificial intelligence at a different company is validating and paying the invoice, where is the human economic reality?
Right.
We might have to completely redefine what a real business even is.
We might indeed. The paper fortress of today might become the digital fortress of tomorrow.
Well, we have certainly moved far past the days of faking a single expense report for a lavish dinner. It is a brave new world of financial forensics. Thank you all for joining us on this deep dive into the phantom economy. We'll catch you on the next one.